What is going on? Is the Ethos Clippers podcast coming at you on a Tuesday evening as the Los Angeles Clippers get ready for two games in Memphis starting tomorrow. It'll be Wednesday and Friday, but coming off a very convincing win against the Chicago Bulls. And who better to have on this podcast than the man that was making news last night as the Clippers were finishing off that win against the Bulls. He's a friend of the podcast, does tremendous work with Clutch Points. You see him all over Twitter. You see him, of course, with the Clutch Points app. You see him writing articles on the Clippers. Most recently had a great piece on Robert Covington and Marcus Morris. And then, of course, broke the news last night that we will see Nico Batum in the starting lineup for the rest of the season, replacing Marcus Morris. And also in that report was Robert Covington sliding into Batum's backup spot. But that part has not been confirmed quite yet by Ty Lue. He's Tomer Azarli back on the Ethos Clippers podcast. Tomer, how are you, man?
I'm good, Brandon. Doing well. How are you? Thanks for having me again.
Of course. And I'm glad that I was able to get you on. I reached out to you a couple weeks ago when I was trying to get a guest on. Of course, you're one of my go-tos. And then I saw your report last night and I said, who better to have on than Tomer? I got to tell you, man, I'm really impressed by the stuff that you're doing at Clutch Points. And it was one of those, it felt like kind of a niche thing at the start where it's just an app that was just trying to get its legs underneath them. And you guys have done a great job. I know you do all the stuff with the social and trying to repurpose content, whether it be Paul George's podcast or be Pat Beverly's podcast or anything else. And then, of course, you're working your ass off and you've gotten to the point now where you've got real life sources, man. And so I just want to applaud you there before we even start this podcast and give you some kudos.
I do appreciate that. That's it's very appreciated. It's, you know, going through the day-to-day grind, you don't really notice or, you know, take notice of some of the stuff. But when you look at, you look back at, you know, my year one, my year two, year three, you see the growth and the development. So it definitely is cool being recognized. I do appreciate it. It's been a long time. I've been doing this a while, man. This is my seventh season. Doesn't feel like it, but my seventh season. So it's been a while.
Hey, eventually you're there long enough. That's how you kind of get the sources, right? Before we even get to the actual content itself of what you have written in the last couple of days. I guess it's a good question to ask you is how you develop sources, because I think that the people who are listening would be interested in how that happens for a writer.
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of it is just, I don't think you can enter, this is just my opinion, I don't think you can enter the business looking to break news necessarily, or I like to use the term kind of clout chasing. You know, the engagement can kind of can kind of be a drug on social media nowadays. I don't think you can go into it with that kind of mindset. I think, I don't think I was ever mine, to be honest. Like, I think I always just, you know, I like basketball. I like the Clippers, and I just wanted to be able to tell stories about a team that wasn't necessarily big on social media. They weren't always on social media. They weren't always on the, you know, the basic cable news or whatever. So like, you wouldn't hear about them very much. Lakers were a different case. They were all over the news. They were always talked about. But the Clippers, you know, even when they got Chris and Blake, I think there was a period there where you wouldn't really hear about them too much. So it was really just about storytelling for me and being able to give fans what I kind of didn't have. And you know, over time, I guess, you know, you just build relationships, and it's a lot of relationship building. You know, there's a lot of, I can't tell you how many discussions happen in an arena that have nothing to do with basketball. You know, it's a lot about lives and kids and movies and food and just all sorts of different stuff. So besides basketball. So I would say it's just a lot of relationship building. I don't, you know, at least for me, if you go into it with the mindset of, you know, trying to break a story, trying to get this or that, I think people can kind of feel that. People can kind of catch on to that. So again, that wasn't really ever my goal, just to tell stories and give fans a different perspective. So, you know, that's why I think, you know, this week in general has been kind of big, because the Marcus Morris, Robert Covington story that I did over the weekend was one that took me a little bit of time to write, to get the quotes for. And so it just, you know, something that I wanted fans to kind of get an understanding from what I was getting as far as talking to players and coaches and just trying to see what was going through their minds that was leading to the decision to play Marcus and not Rocco. So, Yeah, that's I know I'm kind of rambling at this point, but that's kind of the idea behind it. Just a lot of relationship building, a lot of just, you know, talking back and forth on about everything but basketball.
That's interesting.
I think over time, you kind of just develop that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, people are not going to reveal information to you if you're just, you know, trying to use them. And in this case, you're actually trying to get that human connection and that interaction that leads to other information coming out. And great timing for you where you write that Marcus Morris piece. And then all of a sudden, the news breaks last night from you that Robert Covington is going to be the backup and Nico Batum is going to be the starter. Curious to get your take on that, because it's something that's been talked about, of course, with Clippers Twitter, is the struggles of Marcus Morris. And you wrote yourself in both articles how much he has struggled since the All-Star break and how his three-point shooting has been dreadful. I think it's under 25% since the All-Star break. Nico Batum, of course, has been shooting very well when he's been on the floor, and he showed that yesterday. I believe it was 8 three-pointers that he hit last night, and immediately it paid dividends with Nico Batum in the starting lineup, with Morris being out, and he will be out again due to the health and safety protocols. And we'll talk about Norman Powell a little bit later, who may be joining the Clippers for tomorrow's game. But curious to get your take on that decision, because it seems like the article that you wrote initially, Ty Lue was adamant that Marcus Morris made sense with the starters because it just fit. And Morris said himself that, you know what, I'm with a guy and a point guard that can rebound. I'm with a center that can rebound. I'm with Kawhi and PG who can rebound. So sure, my rebounding stats may not look great, but I'm boxing guys out. And you point out some numbers where the Clippers rebounding was actually better at times with Morris on the floor. So curious your thoughts on that move of Robert Covington being the backup, Nico Batum being the starter, and Marcus Morris perhaps being out of the rotation.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's worth mentioning that a big part of Marcus Morris's value is, especially alongside Kawhi and PG, is being able to provide that floor spacing, being that physical kind of body that can give a bit of the fours, maybe some of the fives, some trouble. You know, I don't want to give sole credit to him, but he was a significant reason for the Knicks Julius Randle struggling the way he did. Shooting, I believe it was 5 of 24 when the Knicks came to town here and the Clippers beat them. Again, it was a team effort, but Marcus Morris set the tone defensively, getting real physical with Randle and making life just hell for him that night. So, like, there definitely is that value in having Marcus out there, especially alongside Kawhi and PG. To me, the tricky part – and just to mention some of the stats, like they were rebounding better as a collective when he was on the court with Kawhi and PG out there, versus when he was off the court and Kawhi and PG were out there. So they were rebounding better with him on. The team was shooting better from three when he was on versus when he was off, and that goes for whether Kawhi and PG were on or off. So, like overall, the team's value, the team's numbers, just seemed to be better when he was out there, and so you know, I think. From a certain perspective, it made sense to keep him out there, especially again with Kawhi and PG, because he gets run off the line arguably more than anyone on the team other than Kawhi and PG, because a lot of teams respect that that spacing that he has, the spacing he provides. Not only that, he does offer you the ability to, you know, against teams like the Warriors, for example, you can't throw a Steph Curry at him and hide him, which is what the Warriors like to do, because Marcus Morris will post you up. For example, if Nico Batum is starting against the Warriors, you can kind of hide Steph on Nico, knowing that he'll stay in the corner, maybe cut at times. But with Marcus, you could post Steph Curry up and go to work. And that would be considered, you know, decent offense, considering the height advantage and all that. So I think the whole idea there was just that it made sense with the starting five the core four of Kawhi, PG, Marcus, and Zoo, with any other fifth person, made a lot of sense. Where it got tricky now the last couple of games is that not only is Marcus struggling since the All-Star break, shooting 23.5% from three, 40% from the field, it's that with PG out, you need more offense, you need more floor spacing, you need more defense from a mobility standpoint, which is what Marcus wasn't able to bring as much as, say, Nico Batum. So I think when you talk about Marcus being moved out of the lineup, if Paul George is healthy, I'm not entirely sure this happens.
Yeah, I don't think it does.
Because I think the amount of the what I'm looking for here, the margin for error shrunk significantly once Paul George went out, And I just didn't think you could start Marcus. I was actually in the process of writing a piece about either Marcus or Eric were going to have to be removed out of the starting lineup. Marcus, Eric, or Russ, excuse me. Because I think you needed that defensive energy from like a Terrence or a Nico. And funny enough, it happened the other day. So thank God I wasn't very far along into that piece. But it was just obvious that they needed some sort of defensive juice, especially after, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Williams were kind of going to town on Marcus Morris. Brandon Ingram and some of those guys were able to get what they wanted on him, attacking him, hunting him on offense. So it was just clear. And I don't necessarily think it's a knock on Marcus, because Marcus has kind of been good for the start of the year. He's been good. He was good last year for them when they needed him to be. You know, he was really good in that 2021 season where he shot 47% from three. They got to the conference finals. He wasn't supposed to play in that series, and he was dragging himself on one leg against the Suns, doing whatever he could with that bum knee, and he battled his way through it. And so I think he deserves a lot of props for that. It just, unfortunately, I think at this point in the season, especially without PG, it was just time, and it was necessary to make a change. Because their season was headed in the wrong direction pretty fast, in my opinion. So
it's wild that it happened this late. I think that's the crazy thing to me, Tomer, is that we've talked for so long about how a change should be made. And there's been talk about how Robert Covington should enter the rotation. And whenever he plays, he does well. And there's been talk about Nico Batum possibly replacing Marcus Morris. And for it to happen in the final handful of games is fascinating. I think you're right, by the way. I don't think this happens if Paul George is healthy, but we saw Eric Gordon obviously replace Paul George, and now with Marcus Morris being out due to health and safety protocols, it's the perfect time to slide Batum in there. And I think it's crazy that this team continues to do these things where they kind of mess with their team and they don't go with what makes sense until very late when they're forced to make a move. And in this case, the Clippers have lost so many games this season by DNPing Terrence Mann, by playing Marcus Morris way more than he should, by playing Russell Westbrook a ton in his first five games at times when he shouldn't have been on the floor. It just felt like they were messing around. And now, oddly enough, it feels like they're starting to figure it out. I think the last piece would really be starting possibly Terrence Mann over Westbrook. I don't think that'll ever happen. But Robert Covington now is going to possibly enter the rotation, according to your report, and Batum's going to start. It feels like almost everything is starting to come together, except obviously PG being hurt. It's an odd thing for Clippers fans to witness. And I'm curious your take on that, because it's been a weird season, Tomer.
I think Robert Covington will play a part for the Clippers. I think it'll just depend on, you know, now you have six games to iron out. Well, not even six games, because Marcus won't be available. But when and if Marcus does rejoin them, you'll have three, four, five, whatever amount of games it is to look at what your bench looks like with Marcus and Roko from there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's still a chance that, you know, as Ty said the other day, he wouldn't commit to Roko being a, you know, the backup four, backup five. And you look at Marcus, I believe there's still a role for him on this team. Despite being demoted from the starting lineup, I think there's very much a role for him. We saw that in the postseason a couple of years ago. You know, we've seen that at times this year. I mean, he started off the year really well, I think shooting close to 40% from three in his first 20 or so games. Then he, you know, suffered a rib injury that kind of messed with him. And I think ever since then, he just hasn't been the same. So, you know, that doesn't really explain the mobility, but more so the shooting. But if Marcus is knocking down shots, you can at least live with some of the mobility issues.
Well, and the crazy thing is, Tomer, is that Ty Lue was saying how it was a perfect fit and how that's why Marcus Morris was in the starting lineup. And then a couple days later, all of a sudden, he's realized that maybe it doesn't fit. Like, that part is strange to me. You know what I mean?
Right. So I actually didn't see this coming this late in the season. I mean, I felt like it might have been coming, but again, with seven or so games, after the interviews I conducted last week, I felt like, all right, this is kind of who they're rolling with. This is it. And so I'm a bit surprised, but it's just clear that they need some kind of jump start to that starting lineup, because they can't keep going down 10-2, 8-0, 11-3, whatever it is. Like, you can't keep going down big margins in the first quarter and hoping to, you know, come back from those each time. You know, Nico, for example, Nico and who was the other guy? I think it was Terrence and Bones. Those three came in off the bench and had to face Brandon Ingram and Trey Murphy, who had like 10 points apiece and were red hot.
Yeah.
And that's not easy to do when you've been sitting on the bench and you got these guys who are now, you know, lighting it up. So I think that there's just always been an emphasis on getting off to better starts. And I think we'll be able to see that. We saw yesterday, and I think we'll be able to see that moving forward. So the Robert Covington case is interesting because I really think he does have a role. And I think come playoff time, you'll see it. Same with Marcus Morris. I think he has a role there as well. But, I think Nico was always kind of the best fit with that unit. I would have liked to see him with Paul George, to be honest. But
yeah,
I think for now, this makes the most sense.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad they're making the move because I think their ceiling was only a certain level with Marcus Morris as the starter. But now it feels like there's something else they can possibly get to with Batum starting. They're kind of maybe starting to figure out what makes sense with who. I mean, I personally don't think this team's going to go very far in the postseason. I think we're going crazy over a team that just still has flaws. But at the same time, the West keeps tripping over itself. So it's very possible that all it takes is a round one win and all of a sudden you get Paul George back. And you could possibly make a title run. It's crazy to see how this season has gone for the Clippers, where they can lose all these games in embarrassing ways to bad teams, and then all of a sudden you still are in it. So I am hoping to be surprised at what this team can do, and hopefully the Batum thing is a start to this team actually figuring it out. And the Robert Covington piece, I'm glad you brought it up, is it's certainly fascinating because we know what he can do defensively, and we know that he has his length and he's able to get his hands on a lot of balls and tip them and get his hands into passing lanes and disrupt teams when they're on offense. And he also has the ability to knock down threes. So he does have a role. And yeah, I guarantee you that we'll see Marcus Morris at some point. Ty Lue has shown that even when guys are out of the rotation, they will play a part. I mean, we saw Rondo out of the rotation at one point. All of a sudden, he helped the Clippers beat Dallas. I think it was in game three. And then we obviously saw Reggie Jackson out for a while of the rotation. All of a sudden, he came back and he was a starting point guard. These guys that are out of the rotation, they're not dead. Like, they come back and they play a role. So that'll be interesting to see what Ty Lue does. And it's a tough coaching job, man. I mean, he revealed on the Pivot podcast that he's had 7 family members, I believe, die since December. And it's crazy that we had no idea, and you can judge Ty Lue as much as you want for how poor of a coaching job he's had this season compared to what we're used to seeing. But again, he's a human being and he's got other stuff going on. And so perhaps that's not as important, whether he should start Marcus Morris or Robert Covington play Robert Covington than what he's dealing back home. It's tough to balance life and basketball, Tomer, and we're certainly finding that out this year with this version of the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, I went around and asked, and it didn't sound like many people around the organization or some of the players even knew that this is what what Ty Lue was dealing with. So, I mean, he did a good job keeping that internal and showing up to work every day and kind of just going through the grind. I think everyone grieves in their own way. I don't think anyone should be kind of told how to grieve. You can't tell someone to leave work if work might be considered their therapy, especially when someone is committed to this as long as he has. Sometimes it doesn't seem like work. So I'm not one to really tell people how to grieve. Like, they can, do whatever they feel like is necessary, whether it's taking time off or continuing to coach the way he wanted to. But it was clear that he did a very good job keeping this internal and not really talking about it based off, some of the conversations I had. So definitely surprising. I think this overall season has just been a grind beginning to end from every which way you look at it. Mm-hmm. It's just been a very, very strange and rough year for, all around. And, as much as you want to critique, Marcus, I believe Marcus had, he had, I believe it was, either he had a child at the beginning of the year, I believe, birth of a child at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. Not something easy to go through. I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
Not something easy to go through.
Yeah.
You look at Ty dealing with what he's had to deal with, not really telling anyone about that. you know, Robert Covington's got his own things. I'm sure every other player is probably dealing with something at some point. So, like, I think people just got to remember these are human beings at the end of the day. They're, you know, they're not robots. They're not out there strictly to entertain, you know, Joe Schmo sitting in the fourth row. These are people. So I just hope people remember that. You know, it's tough. These guys are, you know, everyone's talking about them making millions of dollars, but it's real life still happens, and you never know what anyone's going through. So, yeah. I mean, I give props to Ty for being able to coach through all this and, you know, keep himself level-headed for the most part. Like, I don't think he gave anyone even a hint of a clue that something was going on. So,
yeah,
you know, all the best to him and his family. You know, I talked to him the other day, just wished him my best wishes and, you know, thoughts and prayers to his family. But that's tough, man. That's tough.
Yeah, no doubt.
Really, really tough.
And this team, clearly, I mean, they vastly underachieved from what we expected to see from them. I mean, you look at what they did last year versus what they're doing this year, and with the availability of Paul George and Kawhi this year, and it's been a disappointment. There's no doubt. And there have certainly been murmurs coming about Ty Lue possibly stepping aside after the season, and you wonder if that possibly has to do with family also, where he's been gone this entire time and he's lost family members. And he may not think that basketball is as important at the moment, or it's a combination of that and the fact that he's tired of having to deal with the load management of Kawhi and PG and trying to coach a basketball team with all these different pieces and thinking the team needs a point guard while the front office may have disagreed. So I think there's been a lot behind the scenes, and there's certainly going to be a piece at some point written about this Clippers team, because there has been chaos all over the place between Ty Lue, obviously with the family members, with guys like Marcus Morris and Nico Batum and Robert Covington, and then Russell Westbrook's addition. And of course, you've got PG and Kawhi and whatever's going on with them, and them missing games. So there's certainly a lot to be written about with this Clippers team. Of course, Terrence Mann. So we'll see. But there, we got to look forward now. And go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think, you know, you mentioned that they underachieved. I think this year from the get-go was a little tough because two games in, Kawhi had to miss a month due to his, you know, I guess some knee issues that he had, a minor setback that he had to deal with. So, you know, off the bat, three games in, they were without Kawhi for about, I want to say, close to 4 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, then Paul George goes down because he had to kind of carry a bit more of the load. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's really to blame, but, you know, from the start, it kind of just seemed like it was they were behind the eight ball from the start, it felt like. To me.
Yeah,
so,
I agree. I mean, you just look at Kawhi.
It never stops snowballing, unfortunately.
Yeah, you look at Kawhi in the first game, he was coming off the bench in the second quarter. I mean, what the hell was that? You know, like, you never see that with anybody. LeBron James came off the bench this weekend, and he entered in the first quarter. Like, Kawhi came out in the second quarter. It was just odd from the start. It's been a very weird season. But I do want to talk about what the Clippers could be gaining. And that is a guy in Norman Powell. And you and I spent the first 20-plus minutes of this podcast talking about Batum and Robert Covington and their role. And let's not forget that Norman Powell certainly played a very large role on this team before he got hurt. And you wonder where he fits now with this team. Because you got to remember, the Clippers brought in, of course, Eric Gordon. They brought in Bones Highland. They brought in Plumlee. All three of those guys have seen their share of minutes recently. Then, of course, you've got Kawhi, you've got Batum, you've got Plumlee. You got Zoo and you've got Westbrook. There are only so many guys that Ty Lue is going to play. Norman Powell is going to obviously be a part of this 9-man rotation. You just wonder what that means for the rest of the guys. And, certainly the Clippers will welcome Norman Powell because he's a guy that has been needed at numerous different times in the last couple of weeks because they needed a guy who can score, who can help spread the floor and attack the hoop. And Norm Powell does get to the free throw line. And he and Eric Gordon certainly play similar roles in their ability to shoot. And Norm Powell can score. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on where he fits, because I think you see Eric Gordon come off the bench. I saw some people talk today about possibly Bones Highland staying in the rotation. I just don't see that. I mean, with Terrence Mann and with Robert Covington possibly now being in the rotation, or Marcus Morris, then you got Norman Powell, you got Plumlee. I don't think we're going to see Bones Highland. That means they're going to go 10 deep most likely. Maybe occasionally you'll see it if you need some energy, but I think right. this probably means Bones Highland to the bench. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at Ty said that he wants to keep a 9-man rotation going, and that means for one, I think Eric Gordon is staying in the starting lineup. I don't think that was ever in question. I think Eric is always going to be a starter once PG went down, because it's just a fit that Ty really likes. So I would guess that Eric stays in the starting lineup. So that leaves you with what? Terrence, Bones, Norm,
Rocco
/ Marcus,
Plumlee,
and Mason.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, and he said he likes going 9 deep, he's not going to go 10 deep, most likely. It'll probably be Terrence and Norm running the two-man unit, mm-hmm. two-guard unit off the bench. And you throw in probably Rocco in there, Mason. I would imagine, and one of the starters, probably he likes to stagger Russell and Kawhi as one of the stars. So I would imagine you kind of go with that three-guard lineup of Terrence, Russ, Norm, and then you go with Rocco and Mason or any kind of combination like that. But if he's insistent on going 9 deep, which is what he says he plans to do, then that's what we're probably looking at. I would imagine. I mean, it's kind of hard to justify taking Bones out of the lineup given how good he's been the last 3 games, I think, since he played.
Mm-hmm.
The second OKC game, the Pelicans game, despite the loss, he played really well. And the other night against the Chicago Bulls. So that's just what I think. If he wants to go 10 deep, then Bones' role is clearly there.
I just don't know.
Knowing Ty, he wants to stagger a star, which is Rush Kawhi, and you want to play Norm, which he said is going to be a big part of the roster. So to me, that just leaves Bones out of the rotation.
And it feels like the Clippers just will be too small with Bones and with Norm and with Mann on the floor. It feels like those three guys, and then you have a guy like Batum or a Covington, I mean, even a Kawhi, if Kawhi would be the four. I just don't know if a Bones lineup with Mann and with Powell and even Zoo and Kawhi, I don't know if that would work. And here's the thing. The one thing that people tend to do is they get really caught up on just a couple of games. And we can't forget that Bones Highland did have a couple of really poor games also initially when he was on the Clippers. He had a couple of good games where he showed some spark. And then he also was very out of control. And he was taking poor shots and he was out of control at the rim. If he gets hot from three and he's able to attack the rim well, then he certainly is something the Clippers want. I mean, the one thing this Clippers team is this team is very old and they don't have energy, and Bones Highland provides that energy.
Right.
But the question is it maybe at times too much when you have Westbrook and you have Bones and you have Terrence Mann? I mean, it's a lot of guys that are obviously going to provide energy, which you want, but at the same time, you need some stability come playoff time. And I don't know if they can take those highs and lows from Bones Highland in that bench unit with those other guys. But I think A is too small, and B, I just think there may just be too much craziness if that even makes sense.
During the playoffs, I think you'll probably see that cut down to maybe like an 8-man rotation.
Yeah.
But as of right now, like yesterday, for example, the second quarter started, the first 5 minutes, the lineup was Russ, Bones, Terrence, Rocco, and Mason. So that's a three-guard lineup right there.
Mm-hmm.
I know Ty likes to refer to Terrence as a three-guard, as a three. But, you know, it's still relatively three guards out there. You know, then Terrence was replaced by Eric Gordon, and they played for another minute with Russ, Bones, and Eric. In the fourth quarter yesterday, in the third and fourth quarter, we had Bones, Terrence, Kawhi, Russ, Bones, Eric again. So, and those lineups were a positive. So, marginal positive. I think maybe like a +7 or +8, something like that. But my point is, I think in the regular season, you can't play them. You can't.
It was also against the Bulls.
It might be matchup dependent. Right. It might be pretty matchup dependent. You know, we didn't see Alex Caruso the other night. He was a great defender. So, it depends on that. But I think there are some situations where you could see that. Against a team like the Memphis Grizzlies, for example, who like to run, you can't afford to play super, you know, some of the older guys, I don't think. They're just going to get right out of the building, as we saw against the Pelicans. So you do need to play younger at times, and the pace that Bones brings might just be what they need in some of those games. And I imagine Norm will be limited off the bat, so it's not like he's going to come in and play 25 minutes off the bat. He'll probably be limited to about 18 to 20 in his first couple games, and then ramp it up to whatever time the medical staff believe he should play by the end of it. But I think there'll be a role for Bones. It's just going to be very, very different on a tonight basis, matchup, very matchup based, I want to say.
Yeah, and with Steven Adams out, the team doesn't really have a true center. I mean, they've been rolling out Xavier Tillman. There's no Brandon Clark, obviously. He's hurt too. So it's Tillman and Jaren Jackson, and Jackson gets in foul trouble a bunch. And so this is certainly a chance when you play against Memphis where maybe Plumlee is the guy that's the odd man out. And you run a smaller lineup with Batum and Rocco as your fives. Like, that's certainly possible as well if the Clippers want to run. And that's when you maybe see a guy like Bones Highland enter the lineup when you see it at the expense of Plumlee as opposed to another guard. So there's a lot of different things that Ty Lue can do, and I don't think there's going to be a consistent eight or nine that we're going to see come playoff time. I think it will depend on the matchups, and we've seen that play out. But I think we need to take it with a grain of salt that, sure, Bones has had a couple of good games, but we got to realize who some of the opponents were. We got to realize some of the teams he was playing against, some of the players he was playing against, who was in, who was out, and kind of evaluate it from there. But it's a small sample size. I know everyone likes to get excited. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when people thought that Amir Coffey should be playing over Terrence Mann. Like, that happened last year. It really doesn't seem like it, but it happened last year. And people need to not overreact. I mean, I'm still waiting for people to come and keep talking about Musa Diabate and how he should be the guy that's starting at the five. Like, that was a thing earlier this year. The season's so long that people thought Musa Diabate was the answer at the five. Like, everyone needs to chill.
And that was just people reacting, I think, in a very,
yeah.
That was just reacting to no center, but that was comical. No one ever actually believed that. I don't think anyone with.
Oh, I had people in my mentions that thought that he was better than Zoo. Like, that was a
better
real
than
thing.
Who?
Better than Zoo. There are people that think that, Tomer. That fans,
okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Fans are crazy. All right. Fans are crazy. Last thing that I want to hit with you, and it's Paul George and his timetable to return. The one thing that we know about this Clippers team is they are not going to reveal actual information when it comes to injuries to their players. And we saw it with Kawhi, where he was basically series to series in 2021. And now we're seeing it with PG, where there is optimism that it's not something very serious, like a torn ACL with Kawhi Leonard. That was never revealed to us until the end of the season. But with PG, the reevaluation is 2 to 3 weeks. And as I tweeted, and as I've said with people who are big-time fantasy guys that are trying to wonder when their guy's coming back, reevaluation does not mean when they're coming back. It means when they're getting reevaluated. And I don't expect to see PG back for the first round. It seemed like Shams confirmed that report today. I don't even know if we see him for the second round. He's going to want to come back, but the fact that he says he doesn't know when he's going to come back, and if PG's saying that, then it may not be as soon as we want it to be. How far do you think this team can go without Paul George, and when would you expect to see him on the floor?
I would say if this team were to get to a game seven in the first round, you might be able to see him. Based on how the first rounds are usually spaced out,
mm-hmm.
and you know, trying to get all those games on TV at the same time, or you know, spaced out between
yeah, it's every other day. Yeah,
there's a chance you might be able to see that. A chance. Now this is the Jim Carrey chance here. That epic video. So, I mean, look, I think if you have to take an injury to your star with as nasty as it looked, I think, you know, by all accounts, it was the best case scenario. There wasn't any significant damage to any of the major ligaments, is what I was told. So, in terms of, you know, being serious to serious like Kawhi was doing that in a torn ACL. For whatever reason, they didn't disclose it till the end. But it sounds like PG avoided the worst, and they're just being super cautious with him. I think there's a lot of rest and rehab over the next couple of weeks, and it'll be a, you know. It basically will come down to his mobility after that, between that 2 to 3 week period. It won't be anything like a pain tolerance thing. Not something you can play on pain wise. It strictly will be mobility wise. If he's able to make the movements and the cuts and all the things that he needs to do as a primary ball handler, as a star he is, then he'll be able to come back. And if not, then he won't. I think it's pretty simple when it comes to his return to play. It will just be dependent on his mobility and how he's moving and all that. So I think, you know, second round is optimistic. End of the first round, if it goes seven, might be possible. But again, there's a good chance. Historically, PG's a bit of a slow healer. And the Clippers medical staff, we know, likes to be uber cautious with their guys. So there's a good chance we, you know, unless the Clippers make it to a mid-second round, we're not going to see him until then. So I wouldn't expect to see him in the first round, but I think there's an outside chance. I just don't think anyone really knows until we see how he's progressing in another week and a half, 2 weeks, whatever it is, because you just don't know. It's going to be all mobility-based. You just don't know.
So based on the timeline that you're saying, and based on doing some quick math with – April 9th being the end of the regular season, and you would assume that the postseason for the Clippers would start either the 15th or the 16th. You go every other day, that kind of puts the return at about the 26th or 27th of April for Game 7. And then you would see the next round start about April 29th, which is a Saturday. So that would be more than a month from now. So obviously the 2 to 3 weeks was in a reevaluation period. And now maybe another 2 to 3 weeks after that is when we might see him return. So I'll be curious to see what happens. I'm not sure how far this team can go without Paul George. That being said, if Kawhi Leonard continues to play the way he has played of late, and you get the contributions from Norm Powell and Terrence Mann and Nico Batum and Zoo, and Russell Westbrook continues to do his thing and play within what he should be doing. And, I mean, obviously the other guys I didn't name as well. This team has a chance to make a little bit of noise in the postseason, especially I think if they get that sixth seed. I think it'll be interesting to see if they face Sacramento. I don't think you want to play either the one of the two. I just don't think you want to play Denver. I don't think you want to play Phoenix if you're the five. So we'll see in terms of what the Clippers end up as. But I'm not sure that they can go as far as they want without Paul George. But at the same time, Kawhi Leonard carried a Toronto Raptors team that didn't have the huge punch of those guys, by the way, that they have now. I mean, you look at who he had around him, and those guys are really good players.
He just had a really solid group of guys.
Exactly, exactly.
Guys who can kind of hold down their own. And I think the Clippers have that. I just think they need to kind of rediscover their roles.
Exactly.
Once everyone finds it. Like in the 2021 playoffs, once Nico was started, it was clear what the play style was going to be, how they were going to play night to night, and what everyone's roles were. Even Pat and Zoo coming off the bench, maybe not even playing.
Mm-hmm.
It was understood at a certain point. So, I mean, look, I think part of it is the Clippers have to pray that PG has Giannis's knee from 2021.
Yeah.
And that that knee recovers as quickly as Giannis's did. Very similar looking injury. So.
Yeah, except that Giannis was back within a week, I think.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, PG's historically a bit of a slow healer. And I know that, you know, when Giannis first suffered the injury, he felt like he may have tore something, one of the major ligaments. PG said he felt the same way. So, again, we'll see when it happens. But this team has the guys to kind of get through a first-round matchup against Sacramento. I hope it's Sacramento, personally. I want to experience almost go to sleep train arena.
Yeah.
Golden 1 Center and see how that arena is. But they have the ability to get through that. There's no easy matchup out West.
No, I mean.
Everyone is going to be a grind.
Exactly.
So it's not like you can say, oh, I prefer this guy over this guy. It's all going to be tough.
Yeah, Phoenix will be tough. Memphis will be tough. Denver will be tough. Sacramento just will be tough just because of the guys they have in Sabonis and Fox.
Wait till you give up a 10-0 run in Sacramento. Good luck.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the one thing you mentioned with Paul George is you said he's a slow healer. But the counterpoint to that is that when he does come back, he shows no signs of rust. Like, that's one thing, credit to Paul George, is that when he comes back, he looks really good upon arrival. So we'll see if we even get a chance to see Paul George on the floor together. See if we can see Paul George on the floor this season again, and if we get a chance to actually see if that continues to be the case. But it'll be interesting. I mean, you look right now, and the Clippers are currently the 5 seed, and they are a game up on Golden State, who is the 7 seed. And I believe 1.5 up on New Orleans, who is the 8 seed. So a couple of big games coming up against Memphis. I don't expect them to win either game at Memphis, honestly. I think Memphis just has been a team that's had their number. But we'll see. I think John Morant sat out today in anticipation that he'll play tomorrow. So I expect to see Morant in that game. But I don't expect the Clippers to win either game against Memphis. And then they got a tough one on Saturday against New Orleans. That game will be even more important than those two Memphis games. So it's not easy.
There's a very good chance they go 0-3 in this in this road trip. A very good chance.
Yeah, certainly.
They've lost 8 of 9. They've lost 8 of 9 against the Pelicans, including the play-in game. And when you look at the Grizzlies have won 4 in a row before the Clippers' last win. So you know they've dominated them historically. I think winning by an average margin of looks like 15 points or so. So like, these games are going to be big. These games are going to be really big. If they can squeeze one win out of this 3-game trip, I think that's the win.
I agree.
I really do.
I agree. I think that if you can win one of these next 3 games, and then you go ahead and you play the Lakers, who won't be easy, obviously. You play Portland, who will be easy, and then you play Phoenix, who may have nothing to play for in that final day. Then all of a sudden you could have 3 wins to end the season. So if you win one of these next 3 and you add 3 wins at the end of the season, I think you'll be okay. I think that you'll be okay to avoid the play-in tournament. So I think you and I are on the same page that 1 of 3 in these next 3 games is certainly is something you'll take for the Clippers. But obviously you'd like more, but I think 1 of 3 is what you need.
Well, if you're not going to get 1 of 3, the Suns and the Lakers games are must wins just because of the division record for now. And the Warriors, I think they have one more game remaining. I think the most wins they can get is 7 in their division. And the Clippers are currently at 7. So if they get one more, either against the Suns or the Lakers, they win the division tiebreaker between them. So they will be able to get a higher seed if they end up tied. They don't have a conference tiebreaker against a lot of the teams. Conference record tiebreakers. A lot of teams, they lost all the tiebreakers for the most part. So they really need to win the Suns game, and they should be okay.
Yeah, and Golden State's been terrible on the road, and they've got to go to Denver on Saturday, and then the following Friday play at Sacramento. So
yes, that's a tough schedule to close out.
Yeah, so their final 4 games are at Denver versus OKC, at Sacramento, at Portland. So 2 of their final 3, or two of their final 4 are difficult, and tonight's a massive game. I mean, as we're recording this right now, the Pelicans are beating the Warriors in Golden State 50-39. So if that game goes the Pelicans' way, then that certainly will help the Clippers as well, because you'd like to see get a little bit of distance between the play-in tournament, obviously. And
I mean, we say that, but the Pelicans, if they win, are basically a game back of the Clippers.
That's
and
true.
They have the tiebreaker against them too, I believe so. Like at this point, I would almost rather Golden State win so they can stay closer to the Clippers. As long as the Clippers win one more game in their division, they have the division tiebreaker.
Yeah, but at the same time,
you go to conference record, you lose the conference record against all those other teams.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you're the Clippers, you can control your destiny against the Pelicans in that game on Saturday. So if you win that game, that'll certainly help you a lot.
The team that's beaten them 8 of the last 9.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And by the way, the Pelicans, after this Golden State game, the Thursday they're at Denver, and then Saturday they're at home to the Clippers, and they're at home to Sacramento, they're at home to Memphis, and then at home to the Knicks. So not an easy schedule for the Pelicans either. So we'll see. It'll certainly be a wild, wild West finish, no doubt about that. I think we'll be seeing teams that'll be alternating positions for the final several games. But you do notice that the Pelicans have a lot more games left than the Clippers, so that helps them as well, because wins will give them a half a game every single time they win. So we'll see. Tomer, again, man, congratulations. I'm super pumped for what you've done so far at Clutch Points and being able to write that in-depth story on Marcus and Rocco, and then all of a sudden to have the news break and you'd break it that Batum will be starting. Super pumped for you. And for everyone that's listening, Clutch Points, the Clutch Points app, you can see Tomer Azarli on Twitter at Tomer Azarli. Does tremendous work. So again, Tomer, thanks for joining, man, and congratulations.
I appreciate all the kind words and all the, you know, just, it really is appreciated. So, and thank you for having me. Always sharing my stuff and sharing my stories and allowing me to, you know, have a voice out there for some Clipper fans. So I do appreciate it, Brandon. Thank you very much.
Of course. You're always welcome on the podcast. And if you want to rate and review the podcast, go ahead, give us a 5-star rating. Give us a review as well. Drop one there on iTunes. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at BDMarcus. It's the at Ethos Clippers handle on Twitter. A big thank you again to Tomer. Until next time, I'm Brandon, and go Clips.